So make sure that you're always not only trying to connect with the people in your class, but also make sure that you're always a kind and courteous colleague, because you never know where those people are going to end up.
This is Max Q, a podcast by Peabody's Launchpad office dedicated to demystifying what life is like after graduation. Every episode, we sit down with a recent Peabody alum to get their take on what life is like for a working artist in today's world. Jobs, work-life balance, finances, time management, we discuss that and more on the Max Q podcast.
Robin McGinnis here. This is an interview with Claire Galloway-Weber, a 2015 graduate who now teaches diction at Peabody alongside maintaining an active performing career. Well, I of course wanted to talk to her about how she maintains these two parts of her career together. I also was particularly interested in speaking with her about how she started producing her own performances, as well as her skill connecting with others via social media. Hi, Claire. I'm so glad to be speaking with you today. We, of course, have had a long personal friendship, but I really wanted to actually pick your brain about some topics related to how you've built your career. So I know you've probably looked over the questions that I sent, but there's a couple at the beginning that we try to ask all of our interviewees just to kind of get a similar picture from each of the people we talk to. So the first thing I want to ask you is just tell us a little bit about what your life looks like right now, which is, of course, right now everything is a little bit crazy. We are recording in the middle of March 2020, which is a wild time due to the COVID-19 crisis. But give us a general idea.
Yes, indeed. So it is, of course, a very interesting time because mostly what my life is focused on at the actual moment that we're speaking is translating all of my teaching over into a remote context. But having said that, that means that I am doing a lot of teaching. So I teach French and Italian diction at Peabody. I also teach the French-German vocal lit course. And in the falls, I usually teach advanced French mélodie. On top of that, I teach beginning piano and voice at a store in Germantown called Music and Arts. I have my own private voice studio, and then I maintain my own performing career. So even amidst all of the strange things that are happening right now in our remote world, I'm still concentrating on sending in applications and reviewing recordings and working on my website.
Cool. So I guess the follow-up question to that is, what do you feel like you did to prepare yourself for the career you have right now? So were there certain things you did consciously or maybe even unconsciously that set you up to be in this multifaceted place?
Sure. So aside from getting a master's at Peabody in 2015, where I focused on voice and opera and art song, I took some time off in between undergraduate and vocal graduate school. And I had a teacher who actually told me, a voice teacher, who told me I should take some time and go get a degree in something else. and it wasn't that she didn't believe in my capabilities as a singer or she didn't believe I couldn't have a career as a singer, but she knew I needed to something to take the pressure off of a career in singing. And so I ended up going to BU to get a degree in teaching French, which was my second passion. I'm a huge language nerd. So I ended up finding out that I really enjoy teaching and I really enjoy teaching languages, which all culminated in the fact that there was an opening in my final year of grad school at Peabody for a French diction teacher. So even though it wasn't necessarily how I pictured my career path, it ended up being one of the better decisions I've made. And I've thanked my voice teacher at the time profusely for that advice.
Well, there's, of course, good company. I think I just saw a tweet from Jamie Barton telling everybody to start getting a double degree.
Yeah, I think it was Tamara Wilson, actually. Oh, but yeah,
yes.
No, it's excellent advice. And it's something that I actually tell most of my students, even right now and even before COVID-19 threw our lives into chaos.
So I guess the next question I have is what has kind of surprised you about your life after graduation? You said that, you know, this hasn't necessarily been how you planned on your career looking. what about it is different, and maybe what did you have in mind before you graduated? Let's say your master program at Peabody.
Yeah, so I think I was excited to be able to continue teaching and find a way to teach language in a way that was still connected to music and allowed me to hone my coaching skills, even though that wasn't something I necessarily pictured. I was really thrilled to see that I was able to combine all of my passions in one job and was really honored and excited to have that opportunity at Peabody. I think the biggest surprise after graduation for most people is the lack of structure, because in school, even in graduate school with a slightly looser schedule, we as opera singers are constantly running off to a rehearsal, whether it's for a voice lesson or for a recital or for a production. And you still have the structure of needing to be certain places at certain times during the day. And you know that auditions are coming up or juries are coming up. And after graduation, even though you have a loose timeline, you need to decide what things you want to apply for. You have to keep track of when those auditions are. You have to figure out how to structure your day so that you're practicing consistently and still making progress. But it's all on you. There's no guidelines. The only structure you have is what other job you might have that has a specific schedule. So it's really kind of being thrown into a black hole and figuring out how to make it structured.
Sure. So I guess this may actually come directly out of that, but have your goals and priorities changed since you graduated then? Like we were kind of going into that a little bit, but did you have like a clear set of goals while you were at school at Peabody, and have they shifted significantly? And if so, how?
That's a great question. I think my goals as I was leaving school were very general and sort of amorphous. I knew that I wanted to sing in international houses and eventually potentially the Met, but I didn't necessarily know how to get there. But the main thing I knew was that I wanted to continue creating recital opportunities to be able to sing art songs. That was something I was passionate about and still am. And I wanted to be able to create opportunities to sing chamber music because I really enjoy collaborating with other musicians who aren't necessarily singers, and also to sing chamber vocal music. So those goals haven't necessarily changed, although they've probably taken a little bit more structured shape. I know how to start talking to people. I know how to find venues, things like that. And I definitely had a goal to eventually become a professor at a university teaching voice or something similar. And so the fact that I got an adjunct position right out of school was kind of a surprise because it came quicker than I thought it would. And so now I am sort of thinking how I want to work teaching at a university, at Peabody specifically, into a slightly more full-time part of my career. Gotcha. So that's definitely a shift.
So you mentioned kind of creating your own recitals and finding venues. I'm kind of curious about how you went around building those skills, and if you have any tips for someone who's sticking around the Baltimore area in terms of self-producing and how they could get started.
Sure. I think the first couple times that I created my own recitals, it was very much just talking to people and asking questions. So I made a good connection with a friend of mine who at the time was a composition major at Peabody, John Henderson, who turns out to be an absolutely fabulous pianist who always wanted to crash through music with me. So we discovered pretty early on that we wanted to collaborate together and that we wanted to discover new repertoire together. So that was great. I already had a partner in crime. And then when it came to venues, it sort of came down to me just talking to contacts I had from all kinds of different sources, whether it was choruses or I just happened to know them because they had been involved in recital series that I'd gone to, and just talking to them about the idea of wanting to do a recital. And they would say, oh, you should get in touch with so-and-so. Or I happened to have a conversation with Josh Bornfield at a new music recital.
And Josh Bornfield, and he said, is...
He runs the War Memorial Arts Initiative, based at the War Memorial in downtown Baltimore. And he said, hey, I have just started a series of concerts and artistic performances at the War Memorial, we would love to have you. So the more that you're just talking to people about your ideas, not only will you find venues and structure and ways to fundraise and people who might support you, but you'll also maybe find collaborators and get advice on how to shift what you're doing to be a little bit more marketable.
How do you approach the idea of networking, and how would you describe your philosophy about it?
So I don't necessarily think about talking to people about opportunities as asking for help. I think of it, and this goes along with my philosophy about networking as well. I think it's starting a conversation with someone who you think might have some insight into what you're doing. So you bring up a concept, even if it's totally in the beginning sort of brainstorming stages, and say, hey, I've been thinking about this and I'd love to know what you think about it. You've done similar things, or it seems like you've taken a certain pathway before and I love your input on this. Maybe we could grab a cup of coffee, or we could meet up and do some collaborating or just brainstorming together. So it really comes down to finding people that you are interested in bouncing ideas off of and hearing what they have to say about it. And often that leads to some form of collaboration, whether it is just combining ideas or you end up working together in some other capacity.
One of the things that I really admire about the work that you do is that you are very active online. You have a very active social media presence. So I'm wondering about how you maintain that and like how you work that into your schedule, and how important it has been, you found it, in terms of promoting the various aspects of your career.
So I often use social media as a form of procrastination. I'll be honest about that. But it's not unproductive procrastination, because I find it's a really good way, again, to connect with people and to see what they're up to. And then I really enjoy Instagram in particular, because I'm a very visual arts related person. I love photography and I love imagery, and I love connecting those things with music and with what people are doing. So I like sharing images that have inspired me, or images of productions that I've been in, because I just find them fun and people seem to engage with them. Because I love seeing those on other people's pages as well, and then hearing some of their sound bites of what they're working on, because that's inspiration for me to get off my butt and do some practicing myself. And then I've also found that it's ways for me to share just little tidbits of things that I'm learning about technique or body work or breathing, just to get people kind of introduced into the world of voice. Because if you are an advanced singer who studied, you still can learn from just a little tidbit about breathing in through your nose or about doing ab exercises. And if you're someone who's completely unfamiliar with singing, it sort of breaks it down and makes it a little bit more approachable. So people can say, oh, I didn't realize that's something that you covered. I could actually use that in my own life, because I do a lot of public speaking, or I do a lot of speaking on the phone, or I'm preparing an excerpt of a monologue and I have no idea how to project my voice without getting tired. So for me, it turns into connecting with people, and it turns into ways of learning more about other people and learning more about other people's campaigns and career paths and what they're interested in. So it becomes, again, kind of sharing ideas and learning from each other and finding ways to connect.
Okay, so you brought up practicing. So I have to ask, how do you organize yourself to practice, considering you have all these various things you do? And especially right now, I know practicing is very difficult, but speaking more generally, what are your kind of organizational tips for helping yourself practice? And what are the ways you keep practicing efficient? Because obviously, being outside of school, I've found at least that I have less time to practice usually than I did when I was in school.
Yeah, I have to say, I struggle a little bit with structuring practice into my day. So what I've started doing, since I do so much teaching in a studio, whether that's for music and arts or it's for my own private students, I try to find times to either get there earlier or take one of my breaks in my teaching schedule to at least do a little bit of warming up on my own, or running through a certain passage, or even just playing through a piece that I'm interested in learning. So really a lot of what it comes down to is mental work for me. I do a lot of playing through on the piano. I sometimes record the piano part so that when I'm on long drives or commutes to different gigs, I can listen to that and place the words over top of it to help me memorize. I do spend a lot of time commuting, so I warm up a lot in my car and play around with different breaths and connections to different parts of my voice. And I also see if I can reposition my body because I sit a lot. So practicing both in the car and sitting on a piano stool, I'm very aware of my body. So when I do finally have something that I'm working towards, whether that's a gig or an audition, I can start applying all of those smaller things that I've been working on pretty consistently into a larger piece.
You've been out of school for about 5 years. I'm curious to know, how has your life changed over the past 5 years? What have been the big things that you've observed?
Yeah, I think since leaving school, I have devoted more and more of my time to teaching, not just diction, but also vocal technique. And what's been nice about my performing career is that I've been spending a lot of time at intensive summer programs where I'm able to have daily lessons with my own voice teacher, but he also allows us to come and observe other students' lessons, which has taught me so much about teaching different voice types and different vocal styles even. So I think just the opportunity to go to intensive workshops like that has not only changed my own singing, but has changed the way that I teach and understand different voice types and styles. On top of that, I am no longer a mezzo. So a few years ago, I shifted into the soprano land, as I like to call it. So in some ways that was really scary because it meant a lot of the repertoire that I had learned in the past kind of disappeared and wasn't usable in an audition context, at least when it comes to opera. But it was also an exciting opportunity to learn a whole bunch of the repertoire that I actually fell in love with when I first started listening to opera. So it's been an interesting journey to go into that new Fach and to explore all of those things as well. So that's definitely been one of the more significant changes since I left school.
A lot of students are very interested in understanding management. Should they have management? Should they be pursuing management? I happen to know that you're working with a manager who I was actually with for a little while, and I'm curious to know your thoughts, both as being a managed singer, and what has that changed? Has it changed anything? And then any advice you would have for young musicians who are considering trying to find management?
Yeah, sure. So I think many things going forward in our career after, you know, post COVID-19 are going to be quite different, but I'll speak from my experience. I would say if you are a younger singer who's still able to go and apply to many of the young artist programs, I would hold off on looking into management until you really find yourself with a schedule that's kind of overwhelming for you to handle on your own. However, I started looking into programs after grad school and sort of during grad school, and I was a little bit older because I had taken that time off in between undergraduate and graduate school. So it came to a point where I was starting to age out of some of those young artist programs. So having spoken to my voice teacher and a few other people on my team, I realized that having management on my side would afford me opportunities I wouldn't be able to get on my own or with the help of those programs. I will say once I got a manager, the only thing that really changed was that I felt like I had someone else on my side. So it felt like a lot of responsibility was lifted off of my shoulders. I felt like I had someone else on my team fighting for me, sending out my information so that even though I still continued doing that because I was looking for opportunities that I really cared about, I had someone else doing some of the work too. And that's true now that I'm with a different manager than I was when I first started with management a couple years ago. And I still feel the same way. I just feel like she's looking out for my best interest. She's looking out for opportunities that will fit both myself and the company's needs. So it just feels like you have someone else on your team when it can be quite a lonely feeling career.
So you've mentioned team several times. What exactly do you mean by that? And then how did you go about building a team?
So I remember when my dad, who is not at all a musician, except that he loves singing out of tune loudly all the time, first mentioned having your own board or your own team. And I just kind of rolled my eyes and was like, Dad, you don't understand an arts career. I don't need a board.
And oh, then that's the more so that I. Because that was something that I ran into fairly early. I think I ran into the like idea of a team at the cooperative program and like when I was an undergrad. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first time I had it mentioned to me outside of my dad was later on in grad school. And then the first time I went to probably to the Savannah Voice Festival might have been the second time that I heard about it and really had it explained to me. So essentially, most nonprofits have a board, and the board is supposed to be a pretty diverse team of people who have backgrounds in different things like accounting and law and marketing and fundraising, things like that. So I would say the same thing is true of people that you want to work with, but they don't necessarily have to be a lawyer or an accountant, but they have to have diverse backgrounds. They don't have to be official people necessarily. For me, I would say the people that I go and talk to tend to be my family, like my parents or my husband, and then a couple of people that I've worked with very closely in different capacities, whether that's a coach I worked with very frequently, my voice teacher I've been with for a few years, some of the program heads of those summer programs I've mentioned, some of the directors I've worked with. So it's, and then I also have colleagues, including yourself, who I will go to for advice because they're people I know well, who are in similar positions as I am, or who have slightly more experience in certain areas than I do. Or I have friends who work in social media and marketing and stuff like that. So it's finding those people you're comfortable going to, just having productive conversations and bouncing ideas off of.
What has been your process for finding your own gaps in knowledge? Because I find that's always really difficult, is to be able to objectively look at yourself and find the spots where you feel like, oh, this is a spot where I really don't get it. I mean, do you have any guidance beyond it's really hard? That's how I feel. It's just been really hard.
Look, it's definitely really hard. And I think also as musicians, we tend to be our harshest critic, our own harshest critic. So sometimes we're even too hard on ourselves. So what I would say is if you can, take a step back and think about general themes of feedback that you're getting from multiple sources. So if you've coached with a number of people, or you've worked with a couple different voice teachers, or you've gotten some feedback from a director from different productions, is there a general basic nugget that is in common between all of those things? So for me, for a long time, I had a lot of people saying, oh, you kind of look like you're thinking a lot while you're performing, or I'm not really getting that you're acting the part necessarily. So I started looking out for performers in my circle who just totally took my breath away and made me forget reality for a minute. And I went and started talking to them about their process in creating that and what it's like for them and how they experience it.
Cool.
So yeah.
Is there anything else that you're kind of reading or watching or ingesting at the moment that feels important that you want to share or talk about?
So what I'm actually reading right now is Julia Child's autobiography because it makes me smile. And it's dark time, so I'm finding light wherever I can. But there are two books that I would love to kind of give a shout out to. The first is I've been reading Mad Scenes and Exit Arias. Hold on, I want to double check on the title of that. Yeah, Mad Scenes and Exit Arias, The Death of the New York City Opera and the Future of Opera in America. It's by Heidi Whaleson. And first of all, it's just fascinating to read the history of New York City Opera and how it went through bankruptcy and kind of came back and then went back through bankruptcy. But it's especially interesting reading it in the context of what's happening now. And then the other book I want to point out is Amanda Palmer's The Art of Asking. So she is an absolute genius when it comes to crowdfunding and crowdsourcing. She was kind of one of the pioneers of that. But the thing I love so much about that book is how incredibly honest and vulnerable she is about how freaking hard it is to be an artist and how she has breakdowns and all this other stuff. But the main point of it is that if you're going to crowdsource and crowdfund, it's not just getting followers and upping your numbers of followers. It's really, truly connecting with them and creating a network of people. So if you stay and hang out after a show and meet all the people that are there, they're going to have a personal memory and connection with you. And in turn, you have that personal connection with them. And I just think it's the most beautiful way to sum up the way that we should be connecting with people in the arts.
Looking back, are there any things that you miss about your time in school, both at Peabody or previously? And is there any advice you'd give to current students to take advantage of that time while they're there?
Yes. So I think the main thing I really miss about being in school is the camaraderie of having that same group of people around you in so many different contexts, and the immediacy of just being able to go up to someone and say, hey, do you want to go sing through some duets in a practice room right now? That would be really fun. Or, hey, can you come listen to me sing through whatever aria or art song I'm working on? I'd love your feedback. And then just having that possibility of going out to grab a burger between rehearsals with those people. So on top of that, many of those people have become not only some of my best friends, but also some of the collaborators I go to most frequently. And some of them have gone on to be composers, librettists, people who are stage managing, people who are working in arts administration. So they're good contacts to have. So make sure that you're always not only trying to connect with the people in your class, but also make sure that you're always a kind and courteous colleague, because you never know where those people are going to end up in your later careers. So that's definitely a piece of advice I would give to people. And then the other is take advantage of finding other things that you really love aside from singing. Like I said, I am a language nerd, and it just so happens that I was able to combine my two loves. So see if there's something else that you find you're passionate about, that you can learn more about, that you can hone as a skill that's marketable alongside with your singing, that you might even be able to combine with your singing. And on top of that, it will make you a more well-rounded human, which makes you, in turn, a more well-rounded artist.
Totally. Well, that was a great note to end on. So I just want to say thanks for taking the time this afternoon to chat about your life and your career. And best of luck with surviving the quarantine.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great fun.
Here's a clip of Claire singing Mozart's Non più di fiori with Michael Fennelly at the piano. Thanks for listening.
Theme music for the Max Hugh podcast composed by Vincent Fasano.